प्रत्यवायो न विद्यते
प्रत्यवायो न विद्यते
स्वल्पम् अप्यस्य धर्मस्य
स्वल्पम् अप्यस्य धर्मस्य
त्रायते महतो भयात्
त्रायते महतो भयात्
व्यवसायात्मिका बुद्धिः
व्यवसायात्मिका बुद्धिः
एकेह कुरु नन्दन
एकेह कुरु नन्दन
बहुशाखाह्यनन्तस्थाश्च
बहुशाखाह्यनन्तश्च
बुद्धयो व्यवसायिनां
बुद्धयो व्यवसायिनां
Today is the day a lot of people have left and are still leaving throughout the day. How many people are leaving today? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7. Okay. So before we just start on the verses for the next three weeks, we're going to be continuing on with this chapter and probably finish the chapter. I imagine we'll finish the chapter. Maybe go farther. So, Greg asked Sharada to send you chapter 2 of the Gita Home Study on PDF. So you should get it in your email. If you haven't already gotten it, you'll get it. And then all of the talks are also, I think all of you know this by now, they're all online in the arshakulam.org. So I think we've sent out a link for that too, which we can send out again along with that PDF. So, since next year, we'll be meeting again and we'll take up the Gita, where we left off. It would be great if you could listen to all of the tapes, but the tapes all, especially that you miss during this next few weeks. Just do a self-study and then study the Gita Home Study, which is so wonderful, right along with it. You know, I do that. Every day before I come to class, I study the Gita Home Study. I study the verses. I study Shankara's commentary. It's just a wonderful, it's wonderful. So if you can do all of that, listen to the talks, do the meditation, you know, the morning meditation, listen to the talks, and then study the Gita Home Study, that'll be really, really nice. Just see if you have the time and do what you can. Okay. Verse 40.
Na iha abhikrama nashaha asti pratyavayaha na vidyate svulpam apyasya dhanamasya trayate mahato vayat.
This verse 40, really the previous verse, was kind of the introduction, saying Bhagavan saying we've finished for now. We've finished with the Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya Yoga means with the Jnana Yoga, Atma Jnanam. So the enfoldment for that for now, for this chapter 2 of the whole Bhagavad Gita, this summation of really what we're going to be expanding on for the whole Gita, that's finished. Now listen to what I have to say about the Buddhi Yoga, Karma Yoga. Listen now to the knowledge, the Buddhi, the knowledge concerning Karma, means Karma Yoga. So he says, with that knowledge, the bondages of, you will be released from what we call the karma bandha, the bondages of karma. So as we went over in the last class, the bondages of karma, not moksha. Karma yoga doesn't give you moksha, but it does give you antakarana shuddhi, that purity of mind. Antakarana shuddhi means that real freedom from my raga dvesha, freedom from my likes and dislikes. The likes and dislikes that I have are really the karma bandha, the bondage of karma, because the likes and dislikes for me are real until I have knowledge. They are real. I want this so that I can be happy. That is a raga. So if this equals my happiness, that raga, that desire is pretty important, because my happiness is kind of paramount for me. Let all, even our prayers, let all beings be happy. Let nobody suffer dukkha. Let all beings be free from the suffering, from suffering. Let all beings be free from suffering. Let all beings be happy. That's archetypal for being a human being. It's not just like, one or two people want that. All beings want that. And the problem is that for me, as an ajnani, as somebody who doesn't have self-knowledge, the way to get that happiness and to avoid that sorrow has to do with my raga dvesha in this desire template. Let me gain this. I need this. I want this so that I can be happy. That means the this equals the happiness. And in terms of the dvesha, I need to get rid of this so that I can be happy. So the elimination of the dvesha, of the dislike, equals my happiness. And so I am then bound by karma. Right? I am bound by raga dvesha. Because if you think you're not bound, then you would have to say, my being a happy person is irrelevant. It's not irrelevant. Everything I do is centered on my own ananda, my own well-being. Even the charity, even the giving, even the dharma of dhanam, of giving, the dharma of caring, the dharma of loving, all of these things are, in a sense, innate to my own nature, which is one thing, but also highly valued by my mind once I experience practicing this dharma. If I practice giving, for instance, the reward is great. The reward for the practice of giving, of sharing, is ananda. So then, as you become more of it's the same for kindness. This is why these are all such esteemed values, because the practice of kindness gives me great rewards. It gives me ananda. It gives me wholeness. It gives me fullness. So even when you're reading the Yama Niyamas and the Yoga Shastra, and you're reading the Ten Commandments and all of these value systems that we have, these value systems are there because the practicing of those value systems give me the reward of shanti, of ananda, of wholeness. And so they're very, very important. Those values, in karma yoga, we live those values, but we give up the raga dvesha, you know? You could replace the raga dvesha in terms of sensory pursuits with a raga dvesha toward, I'm just making this up, but it's true. Nevertheless, it's true. You can replace that raga, these likes and dislikes, for let me have this object or this object or this person or that person or this career or this house or whatever that this happens to be in terms of something that exists as an object in the world away from me, which I need to seek. Let me have it, because if I have that, I would be happy, you know. And we find, as I've said, we do find when I fulfill a desire for some sort of sensory object, something that I can attain, you do have a fleeting moment of happiness. But it's only fleeting because now you have that object. I have the object now. Now we can forget about it. I have it. What do I need next? And the mind works very, very quickly in that way, you know. So let's replace. You can start by replacing these, I want this so that I can be happy. You can start replacing that, and I think we do can replace. We do replace that in a way, but maybe not with such clarity. You can say, I want to be kind so that I can be happy. I want to be giving so that I can be happy. You know, I want to make my partner happy so that I can be happy. Where the happiness, the gain of happiness then starts becoming, even in your mind, even though you've experienced this all along from a young age, you experience the results of your kindness or your charity, your giving, all of these things. It makes you happy. But what if you say that I want these values so that I can be happy? And that's still on a relative level. But the happiness that you get is of a different order. It's much more deeper. The shanti is much better. It's more long-lived. It's not just a flash in the pan. You know, it becomes for me a way of being that is so beautiful. That's why when Swamiji wrote this Value of Values, most of you hopefully have read that book. I always pass that out to all my students, even at school where I'm teaching. It's such a beautiful book because all of a sudden you realize how important these values are for your own ananda. Okay? And so it's still relative. It's still relative. But it's less. It's more long-lasting. And the ananda and the inner freedom that you feel is much deeper and much closer to yourself. And so these values start becoming more and more important. And I find as these values become more important, my raga dveshas become less important. The raga dveshas in terms of let me have this sense pursuit and let me fulfill this sense pursuit, they become less important only because this becomes more important. It's not that they're not important. But when one becomes a mamukshu, now this karma bandha, these bondages of karma, which are in a sense, on a relative level, broken by your values, when your values become first, now we're going to a different level because as mumukshus, we're gaining knowledge, we're gaining self-knowledge. And so when that is the case, the person who's practicing karma yoga, as well as the person, we'll see this in a minute in much more depth, the person who's practicing karma yoga and the person who's taking sannyasa, both these are two lifestyles. The person who practices karma yoga is staying in the world with a certain attitude, prayerful attitude toward Ishvara, as we'll see. As you're practicing that karma yoga, you're doing that practice for antakarana shuddhi, to help my mind become free of these likes and dislikes. That's what it's for. But I'm doing all of that so that my mind becomes a receptacle for this knowledge, for self-knowledge. Because the nature of yourself is always free of raga dvesha. It is always ananda. It's not coming, it's not an ananda or a fullness that's coming and going. That is who you are. And so we're practicing karma yoga because it is a device, it's a method, it's a practice which creates a mind that is very within a hair's breadth of the natural abiding mind of a jnani, of somebody who really does have self-knowledge. So the karma yoga could not get you closer to the mind of a jnani. And it's that mind that's really free of these raga dveshas because they've, in a way, I'll explain this in a minute, they've lost their value because of the finite nature of these gains that you have discovered, you know. It's a huge thing, like it's that Ascharyavat. What a wonder. What a wonder to discover, to recognize this thing that's pervasive to the creation and always there to be recognized. But if we've had beginningless lifetimes, as the Shastra says, it's taken us a long time to recognize this, something that is so obvious. Maybe because it's so frightening to recognize that none of your pursuits, none of your gains, none of your accomplishments give a lasting fullness. They are not able to do that. So that is actually perhaps, I never thought of it about this way, and this is a good thing about teaching, you always get these little gifts. Because we're afraid to recognize it. We have a defense system against recognizing this because then what? Then what? You know, you recognize that in fact, the fulfillment of all of your ambitions that you would think would make you a complete whole being, and now I've made it. And we say this, I've become accomplished now. All is well with me. It is over. That doesn't happen. And it can't happen. It doesn't happen because of any lack in yourself. It cannot happen. And that's probably the frightening thing about it. When you really understand the nature of the creation, it can give you what you want. You can work for it. You can accomplish. If you're blessed, a lot of obstacles can come in the way also. But if you work hard and really take appropriate action, you have a good chance of being able to accomplish many of the things in life that you are seeking. You have a chance to do that, and you know it. You know you have a chance. You know also there's obstacles. You don't always get what you want, but you certainly can do it. That opportunity is there. It's not a given, but it is there. So we know that. So that's not a problem. You know, it's just hard. It's not a problem. But what about when we realize, yes, that opportunity to accomplish these things definitely is there. And if we work really hard, you know, and if we have a little bit of luck, we can make it, we can get it. But what if you realize that, yes, I can get it, but the thing that I think is going to bring me the ananda, the wholeness, that now all is well with me, that is not true. If that is not true, what if I see that? And I see that actually there's not really any exception to it. Because even though it gives you that experience of wholeness, that experience is finite. And you are expecting it to, now that I have this, everything is okay, everything is fine. And you realize over and over and over again, I would say you don't realize it, but over and over and over again, that's not happening. What is happening instead is a moment of elation and satisfaction, and you can even have a party and all of that. But the actual ananda, or feeling of resolve that accomplishment has brought you, doesn't last for very long. Sometimes I say 15 seconds, and I'm actually not kidding. When I say 15 seconds, say 15, 20 seconds, 40 seconds, for the next thought to come. Yeah, but I need this. Or, okay, I've got this, but this is going to be an obstacle. So the mind starts revving back up into recognizing the limitations of that gain. And what's the problem with that? Well, that seems fine. I'm seeing, okay, the limitations, we can get this and we can get that. But what isn't fine is that beautiful ananda and wholeness and all is well with me. As the mind starts becoming extrovert and getting engaged in the world, within that 15, 20, 40 seconds, this ananda starts going, and I'm back to where I was. And that can be really very shocking, especially when it was a big desire. And so instead of recognizing the limitation of the pursuits in the first place, we'll say something like, not even really saying it, but just unconsciously saying it, I need this also, you know. That's why. I need this also. But that goes on for until you've recognized that what is continually finite is continually finite. The world is finite. It's continually changing. I am continually changing. There's no way to line anything up permanently. So even things that I really wanted at one time, I don't want it another time. That's the nature of the creation. But my wanting to, I would say like this, my wanting to actually be myself, myself is not a continually changing entity going from happiness to sadness, happiness to sadness. That's not who I am. That's not my being. My being, in fact, even in your experience, I am ever present. You cannot have an experience minus yourself. The experiences go on negating each other. Yourself is always present. That means there's some, the sun, the me, has got to be free from these sukha-dukha experiences. I'm neither one. I'm my own nature. And that nature I'm trying to continually recreate in the mind. I am trying to recreate my nature
or get a harmonious vritti, a harmonious vritti that is in resonance, that resonates with my own being by fulfilling these desires. And when I get this harmonious resonating vritti thought modification, because when I fulfill a desire, at that moment I'm desireless. All is well with me completely. You're so focused on the desire, you fulfill it, you have a few seconds of desirelessness. That's the Mahatma. That's a Mahatma. You're a Mahatma. For a moment. For a moment. All is well with me. You know? I don't want anything. Nothing needs to be done. I am as I am. I am whole and complete. And then that's very powerful. And you feel, yeah, this is me. This is how I'm supposed to be. And then and you think, oh no, how can I, you know? And so that oh no is the karma bandha. That's the bondage of the karma of my raga. The bondage of the karma is those raga dveshas which are based in self-ignorance, which causes me to project that ananda that I do experience when my mind just becomes quiet. Then I think, everything's fine. I am whole and complete, you know. I believe that I will attain that state of myself by fulfilling my desires. Because when I fulfill it, we don't think like this, all of the logic to it, but we think when I fulfill that desire, I become whole and complete, which I do. For 10, 15, 40 seconds, if I'm generous. that's being really liberal. Okay. But you still keep the object. It's just that that freedom doesn't last very long, the freedom. But I know that freedom is real. I know it is me. And when it goes away, I want to bring it back, and I can't. That's also kind of a weird and disturbing experience, that freedom is there, you watch it slipping away, and you try to catch it somehow or try to do something to make it come back, and it just goes in spite of yourself. Where does it go? What has happened? You know? So this all of this comes about really because of not knowing myself and then trying to get a thought modification through fulfilling my desires that resonates with me, which is a thought modification, which is as though free. It's not asking for anything. It has no desire at all at the moment. The wholeness of myself is reflecting in it, you know, and so now I feel fine. And so, of course, I get that validation continually, and so I'm continually running after my raga dveshas, you know. That's the samsara. That is what we're trapped in, you know. That's the karma bandha. Now this karma bandha, this attachment, this bondage caused by our likes and dislikes, that bondage is relieved by karma yoga and released by jnana. That's the thing. So the karma yoga brings the mind into a shanti, which is, as I say, Swamiji said this way, a hair's breadth. It's a hair's breadth from the mind of a jnani. So close, and so we have to. And so that karma yoga, understanding the karma yoga, is really our primary sadhana. Because that's an attitude, the karma yoga, there's karma. Karma means all action. Karma yoga is an attitude that I bring toward the actions, the karma and karma pala. Karma means the action that I take, and karma pala means the result that I'm taking the action for. So I'm doing this, basically, I want this so that I can be happy, and I want this so that I can be happy. I want to get rid of this so that I can be happy. So for the ajnani, the one who doesn't have self-knowledge still, this these achievements are my happiness. That's what I will achieve, is my happiness. For the mumukshu, because of my viveka and vairagya, viveka means that discrimination. Discrimination here means I recognize clearly that all of these achievements are finite, which means the ananda, the fullness,
the happiness is finite also. The achievement, everything's gone away. The whole mental state has gone away. Everything's gone away. Along with the ananda. I recognize that clearly. And in that recognition comes vairagya. Vairagya means desire template, I want this so I can be happy, really doesn't work. It cannot give me really what I want, which is to be a whole and complete being, which I know that I am. I have experienced it. I know, because it's me. When the obstructions are just for the time being, it's kind of removed, you know. I know this is me. This is who I am. This is how I am supposed to be. How do I become that? How do I achieve it? Why does it keep falling away? Yeah. Now I know why it keeps falling away. That's the viveka. That's the discrimination. I recognize the finitude of all experience, including sukha and dukkha, pleasure and pain. I know it clearly. And therefore now, I have a little space in reference to my desire to find myself, to find that ananda in the world. I have some space. And I gain a vairagya, the dispassion. It's not a sour grapes dispassion, maybe a little bit, but need not be, you know. It's more that this can't give me what I want. And when this can't give me what I want, my relationship to, when I know that, my relationship to it changes. And so the mumukshu now, Bhagavan gives a way of being in the world with all of your, in the world as you are, with all of your relationships, with the life as it is. He gives you, because you're also, just like the sannyasi, the karma yogi and the sannyasi, both are mumukshus. Mumukshus means those who desire liberation. Somebody who wants to be free, who wants to know yourself. So whether you're a karma yogi living in the world, or you're a renunciate, a sannyasi, taking, like Arjuna really wanted to do, just go to the forest and sit under a tree and have somebody come and teach him. In either case, both of you are mumukshus, desirous of liberation, desirous of self-knowledge, and both of you, you know, are studying. Both of you are coming to class. Both of you are trying to gain this knowledge, you know, exposed to this knowledge, to this teaching. Okay. So then, that being the case, for both, there's what we call a vyavasayatmika, so see, buddhi. There is clarity. You have a clear conviction in terms of what you want in life. You have a clear conviction. Because of the viveka and vairagya, you know what you want. What you want in life is to know who you are, you know? Is to be free, free of the samsara, free of this momentary moments of happiness followed by dukkha, the loss of the happiness. I want to know myself, and I want to know myself because I have recognized clearly viveka vairagya, that this world cannot, will not give that to me, not because it's mean, but because it cannot. It cannot, you know. And so I become very clear on that. And then that's also, I said the other day, that's kind of in Christianity what they're called, like the dark night of the soul. Because now what do I do? But, and that's when we throw our hands up to Bhagavan, to God, to Ishwar, and say, you know, please, please help me. If there's any way out of this, please teach me. That's what Arjuna did, you know. I see no way out of this situation. He even said, actually, I see no way out of it. There really is no way out of it. If I do this, if I kill all of my family members in this war for Dharma, for the sake of Dharma, I will be miserable. I can kill them, I'll be miserable. If I win, then all of these enjoyments and everything will just be soaked in their blood. So what can I do? Where is there any freedom there? So he says, I'm going to go give up everything. I'm going to go and just go to the forest and study. You know, sit and study. I'll take sannyasa, go to the forest and study. Then nobody will be killed. And life will just go on as it was before. And Krishna says, oh no, life's not going to go on as it was before. It's going to be going on, ruled by a dharma. That's not going on. He spent all of this time giving Arjuna a pep talk. You can't run away from your situation. You have duties. You have responsibilities. Yeah. You have to fulfill those responsibilities. Also, your disposition suits your responsibilities and your life. And so you can't just leave your responsibilities and your disposition that goes along with those responsibilities and all of a sudden become a sadhu who's ready to just sit in meditation and the rest of the time do shravana manana, exposing yourself to this teaching. You don't have that disposition. So when you go to the... And then when Krishna will say, when you go there and you're sitting under the tree and you hear what all these people are saying about you, what a coward you are and how you ran away and gave up your responsibilities, what disposition are you going to have then? You're a warrior. You know, that doesn't just go away. You know, you're not in a situation to just sit under the tree. And so when he's telling this to Arjuna, we all say, oh, yeah, poor Arjuna. Bhagavan's not going to let him go. He's not going to let him go and do what he really wants to do. But he's not going to let us go either. We're like Arjuna. We also cannot run and sit under the tree. We need to be here in the world so that the world becomes our tree, so to speak. So that I can be full and complete in this world. That my ananda, my own being, you know, is not being projected onto the world. And then like a really normal person, I'm just normal samsari. I'm just running after that and that and that in order to become free. That is the habit we have from beginningless time. Because of ajnanam, it's not like you had knowledge before. Knowledge destroys ajnanam, right? Any knowledge, it destroys the ignorance. So it's not like you go from knowledge to ignorance in reference to a given thing. So if you knew yourself before, there'd be no problem. It wouldn't come back because you know who you are. You're not all of a sudden going to be a samsari projecting yourself, you know, onto the world and running after it. Not going to happen. But we have a lifetime of being samsaris, you know. And so Krishna will make the point over and over, you have to stay here. But stay here with this attitude, which we call karma yoga. So what he says here in reference to this attitude now, which he's going to unfold really thoroughly, what is this karma yoga attitude? What is it? He says, na iha abhikrama nashaha asti. Here, with this karma yoga attitude, there is no destruction or destruction, nasha. There is no nasha of any abhikrama. Abhikrama means of anything that you've begun. You know, Shankara uses the illustration of, say, if you're a farmer in agriculture, you do everything. You create, you prepare the soil, you add the seed, you do everything that needs to be done. And yet then there's a drought. You know? And so all that you've tried to do is in vain, right? Not really because of you, but because of the drought. That's how it is. Our pursuits can be successful or unsuccessful depending upon so many different things. So if your ananda, if your wholeness is dependent upon the success or failure, you know, of a given pursuit, then that's a very tenuous situation, and it certainly is not a given that you will be successful. But with the karma yoga buddhi, buddhi's attitude, with that karma yoga attitude, there is no such thing as the destruction of something that you've begun, nor pratyavaya, nor is there a mistake to be made. Like, say you've begun something, that beginning can't be destroyed.
And then along the way, mistakes are made. You know, either you make some sort of a mistake in the way that you've gone about it. There's some sort of obstruction there, some what we call some dosha or defect in the way that you were trying to get that, which also negates it. These things are not possible for karma yoga. So he says, swalpam api asya dharmasya. He says, even for a little bit, even with a little swalpa, means even with a little bit of this karma yoga attitude, that even that little bit, he says, trayate mahata bhayat, it protects you from great fear. Little bit means even if I kind of get it, I kind of understand it, I'm kind of practicing it, you know. Even that alone, that little bit protects you from great mahata bhaya, the great fear of samsara. Because in samsara, in this world, we know what's at stake. We don't have any such illusion, unless we're mentally ill, you know. We don't have any such illusion that whatever I attempt, I will get. Whoever I want to be with, they will love me and want to be with me back. Whatever thing I undertake, whatever thing I desire, I just go for it, I will get it. You really have to be mentally ill to think that. We have too much experience, you know, where you pray, Bhagavan, please let me have this. Please let things work out. If you're religious or spiritual, not quite a mumukshu yet, you know, you say, Bhagavan, please let this work out. Why do you pray? Because you know it may not work out. We all know that. It's tenuous. So when the desire is a big one, the fear is more, you know, because the desire can be huge. It can be, I really have to have this for my life, for the success, for the well-being of my life. It's very necessary. It's very necessary. So imagine the stress you carry with that one. It's a tremendous stress, if you really believe that, you know. And that's not an unusual belief. You don't have it all the time, but there along the way, there are things that you feel are really, really necessary for your ananda. And that's very stressful. And you know what else is horrid about it that we all experience, maybe not define it so much, is that when you have such an important desire to fulfill, immediately as that gels, as that comes into being, the world divides up. You can it's almost a sensation, sensory, vibratory experience, where the world divides itself up into those people that are on your side and will help you fulfill that desire. To those people who are your enemies, because the desire is important, these people are your enemies because they want it for themselves. They want what you want for themselves. Or they have jealousy of you or hatred of you, you know, or in some way are inimical for whatever reasons for you fulfilling that desire. So you have the wonderful people that you really love and respect, and you have these evil, hateful people that you wish didn't even exist. Now that's extreme, but that's what happens depending upon the size of the desire. Now if it's a little desire, these people are a nuisance and these people are helpful. Big desire, these are the devils. These are the evildoers. You know, and these are the saintly people. And then there's all the other people that don't matter at all because they're not involved. World breaks up like this. And then the raga dveshas grow like crazy. It's like in the Mahabharata, in the Ramayana, Ravana, who Rama, as an avatar, is going after. He's a great, powerful rakshasa. He's like the personification of evil and selfishness and adharma. And Ravana goes after him, and they come within arrows of each other. And Rama goes on shooting off all of the heads. Ravana's got like 10 heads, you know. And Rama goes off shooting off all of these heads. But as he shoots off the head, another one pops up, you know. And another one pops up, and another one pops up.
And so finally realized that I've got to get the main head. If I don't get the main head, these heads are all multiplying, you know, immediately multiplying. And that's how it is with a big desire. This person is an obstacle. Okay. This person's wrong. Okay. This person, my saintly person, has become an obstacle. Oh my God. And of course they pop up and they change places. This person. So funny. This person that I thought was loved me and cared about me and wanted my happiness. Look at what they're, you know, what they're doing now. How could they do that? I had so much shraddha in that person. I love that person so much. They've gone and changed on me. The opposite can happen. I thought this person was my enemy. Oh my gosh, they're not my enemy. They love me. They're really a wonderful person. How could have I thought that? You know, because they're helping me. So it's all, you know, it's just going back and forth, back and forth. That's the samsara that we experience. It's very painful, actually. But once I become a mumukshu and I start to gain knowledge, I start to recognize that the nature of my being is the ananda that is projected out onto the world. It doesn't exist out here. It is the very self of the whole universe. It's not an object in the universe. As my mind starts, because mumukshu, right, so as my mind, I'm desirous of self-knowledge, I start to understand, I start to see that actually what I'm seeking is the ananda, that wholeness, which is really not objectified in the world, but is my very nature. Just by seeing that, now, as my mind projects out, I know it's projecting out. Right? As I see my mind running after this and running after that, just, I call it habitual ignorance. Because you see, and yet your mind, because for beginningless time has been behaving like this, it goes on behaving like this, but with a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of clarity. And so that little bit of clarity, then with an attitude of karma yoga, which gives me the means for handling this running out, you know, brings my mind into a state of shanti, of peace, that is so close to one who really, whose mind just naturally abides in myself, and objectively I experience the world as Ishwaran and do what is to be done, right? So for the one who has this knowledge, who is gaining this knowledge, the mumukshu, this karma yoga that they call dharma, the dharma of karma yoga, becomes just the greatest gift, because it is a solution. A whole life, instead of being one for satisfying raga dvesha, becomes really one of like a prayer, where I receive all of the results of my actions with what we call a prasada buddhi. Prasada, most of you know, you've been with Swamiji, so you know that what we mean by, with our Swamiji. You know what we mean by prasada. When you've done a ritual or you've done a puja, at the end of the puja, then the pujari will offer prasad. It could be, it's a gift. It's a gift from Bhagawan. You've done this puja, this ritual to Bhagawan, and this is what, and Bhagawan gives you back some prasada, right? And so when I'm doing the action with that attitude of a puja, means I'm in relationship with Ishwara, then I receive the results of that puja with that prasada buddhi. It's very beautiful, because all of my actions can be backed by that attitude, which means that will affect the disposition with which I'm doing any given action. And it certainly affects the disposition of how I receive the action. So both the disposition of doing the action and receiving the action is one of shanti, one of love, one of commitment to my knowledge, one of commitment to Bhagawan. So we call that prasada buddhi, you know. So when you're given, like when we did the beautiful Guru Purnima, and they had that wonderful prasada, so we took that prasada. That prasada you took with such love and devotion, you know. And you know, if the prasada had sometimes are just a few drops of water, the water that was used in the offering, that what was offered to the Lord, the waters that was offered to the Lord, that is what becomes the prasada. And if you receive that prasada, you would receive it with the same attitude as you receive, you know, the sweet, or the meal, or the flower, or the chandas. It could be anything. It doesn't make any difference at all what it is, because it's prasad, you know. It's coming from the Lord. So the whole relationship becomes one of puja, in a sense, to everything. This whole world as Ishwara. So your actions are prasad, and the results of your actions are prasad. So this is what these verses are really going to get in. We'll just do this. We already chanted this 41. I'll just tell you basically quickly, because it is simple. He says, the vyavasayatmika buddhi eka. Vyavasayatmika buddhi eka. Ihe kurunandana. Says here, kurunandaha means the one who's blessed, and one who's the joy of the Kuru clan, you know. He says, here, there is single-pointedness. Vyavasayatmika buddhi, your knowledge, your commitment, is one alone. You're committed to jnana. Your commitment is to self-knowledge. And secondarily, to antakarana shuddhi, to that purity of mind. A mind that becomes a container, a strong container for this knowledge. That is what you're doing. It's clear. You're not doing anything else. You are doing many, many, many actions. You have many, many, many responsibilities. But all of them have only one intent. And that one intent is the antakarana shuddhi, that purity of mind, that freedom of mind, which is so close to the mind of a jnani. That freedom of mind that is really a puja to Ishwara and a receiving of that prasad. That's what you're doing. And so with that attitude, there is no sukha-dukkha. The sukha-dukkha is totally irrelevant. There's not sukha-dukkha. There's just the dharma, what is being asked of me, what is there to be done, what need I do, just in terms of my dharma. And then, in terms of my desires that are within that dharma, the performing of those desires, the working for those achievements, but with that prasada buddhi. Like, Bhagavan, I want this, I'm working for this, but I accept whatever comes as prasad from you. So even the acting out of my desires and my aspirations, because they're there. That's why we want karma yoga, instead of taking sannyasa. If you take sannyasa, you can't act out those desires you may have. As long as those desires are within dharma, then I want this and I want that, so I go for it. That kartritvam, that doership, is still there because I'm not complete in my knowledge. I'm just a mumukshu, you know. And so let me go for all of these things, but with that karma yoga attitude. And with that karma yoga attitude, you know, I take the results of my efforts with that prasada buddhi. The prasada buddhi, whether it's a little flower, a drop of water, or a big meal, it doesn't make any difference, because I take it with that attitude. And that frees me. So he says here, in this karma, with this karma yoga buddhi, I am single pointed. I know what I'm doing. I'm doing one thing. I have one attitude with which all things are done. That's the meaning. Then he says, if I don't have that clarity, for those who don't have that viveka, who don't have it come to that karma yoga buddhi, then for those people, there are your buddhi, your commitments, are many and varied. He says, anantaha. They're all over the place. Bahushaka. Many branches. I need this. I want this. I need to do this. I need to have this. And the tree goes on growing. Right? You know, in a tree, like in the farm, we plant these beautiful little trees, and they go on growing and branching out, and the branches branch out, you know? And those branches branch out, and it gets taller and taller and bigger and bigger and more branches. That's bahushaka. And so will my needs and what I want go on increasing? And there is no single point in this. I'm a juggler, you know. I'm handling all of my different desires and trying to manage all of them. So it's hard to have just that single-pointed buddhi, you know, where my mind enjoys just the ananda of myself and is in a state where this is ready for this knowledge. This knowledge takes place, it's ready for it, because it's a thing. I have a thing. My nature is much more single-pointed. We're going to spend a few verses talking about this bahu shaka. Bahu means many, shaka means branch. So I have ananta. Ananta, anantaha bahu shakaha. Ananta means like limitless branches, you know, many countless branches. And those are, so there is no single pointedness in my buddhi, you know, my commitments go many, many countless directions. For the one who doesn't have the viveka, vairagya, and then that mumukshutvam that allows me to even have karma yoga. Karma yoga is for the mumukshu. It's not something that's not applicable for a samsari or even a dharmi. That dharma, you can be a dharmanishta, such a good person, committed to dharma, but you need not be, you don't have the karma yoga. Karma yoga is an attitude that involves the mumukshutvam and gaining knowledge. We can also look at the difference. In fact, the Shastra will look at the difference as we go on. So, that's it.
Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.